College Football Nerds here talking Ohio State and Minnesota. We are talking 2021 football, and we're not talking realignment or any preseason previews. This is a game preview, and we're excited about it. We're glad y'all are here. Two things of note. One, as always, in the comments, after you're sure that you've hit subscribe, liked, and the notification bell, in those comments, give us your score prediction, and we will mix it up with you, tell you why you're wrong. You can tell us why we're wrong. I think Minnesota fans are going to remind us that we missed that Auburn pick a couple years ago. So we'll take the L. We're happy to. And then another thing, we are doing a live show, 10 p.m. Eastern, on game day. September 4th, Saturday, during all the action. So we'll have a lot to talk about that's already happened and some things that are still going on. It'll be a lot of fun. Our live shows are really great and just a lot of fun. So, and there's two of us, so one of us can man the chat and one of us can talk. It'll be fun. All right, Josh, so we always struggle in these early season games because we're nerds. We like to talk numbers. We have a computer model that comes in week four. But there's this kind of an interesting note that you were when you were doing a little prep for this in terms of comparative defenses in this game between Ohio State and Minnesota. And I want you to touch on that because to me, it brings about some questions about the point spread in this game that I think are worth noting. But just kind of get us into sort of those statistics that you found about these two defenses as a way to kick this one off.
When you look at the overall season statistics for Ohio State and Minnesota last year, they're not that dissimilar. I mean, Ohio State, in terms of total offense in the Big Ten, was first in the conference. Minnesota was fifth. If you looked at total defense in a yard per play basis, Ohio State was 11th, Minnesota was 14th. So that doesn't sound all that different. I think the rub, though, is when you start looking at the numbers and the gap that they presented. So again, first to fifth, Ohio State versus Minnesota on offense. What does that mean? Well, it was actually about a 2 yard per play differential. The gap between Ohio State and Minnesota 1-5 was larger than the gap between Minnesota and Rutgers, who was 14th. And the same thing shows up on the defensive side of the ball. Ohio State did not have a top-end defense last year, and I think most Ohio State fans understand that. 11th in the conference, 5.85 yards per play allowed. That's not really a great number. You usually want to see that more around 5. But 5.85, you know, is bad. Minnesota was 6.9 yards per play on the year. Almost 7 yards a snap surrendered to their opponents. And to put that in perspective, the gap between number 2 Northwestern defensively was 4.86 yards per play and Ohio State was about a yard. 4.86 to 5.85. The gap between Ohio State and Minnesota was larger than that. So Minnesota wasn't just bad defensively. They were bad almost by an order of magnitude, Illinois and Minnesota in particular. And the real cause of that was the rush defense. Now, Ohio State struggled in pass defense throughout the year. They had issues. They had, like a lot of depth problems at corner that showed up. I don't think Sean Wade was ever really should have been a primary corner for that defense. Maybe he wanted to be, but it really shouldn't have been his role. But they didn't really have an issue with run defense. Ohio State allowed 3.35 yards per carry. 3.3 yards per carry is a great number. That's a very solid run defense that was tied for second in the Big Ten, actually tied with Wisconsin. Minnesota was 14th. And they weren't just 14th. They were 14th at 6.3 yards per carry. That's abysmal, frankly. About double the amount that Ohio State was giving up. And that's why Minnesota ended up having a rough year. It's why Minnesota lost badly to Michigan early in the year. It's why they had struggled really in all their games, be it Iowa, Maryland. Really the only teams they stopped were right at the end of the year. Nebraska you can kind of set aside because, you know, I forced myself to watch that game Saturday and wished I didn't against Illinois, but Nebraska is what they are at this point. And Wisconsin, whose offense was really, really putrid. So I think it's kind of amazing that Minnesota finished where they did, given they didn't play Ohio State, they didn't play Indiana, they didn't play Penn State, who, yeah, they were not a great team, but it's because the defense wasn't doing well. The offense was very highly rated. None of those teams played Minnesota, and Minnesota still ended up with a really, really hard defensive statistics. So going into this game, The biggest takeaway I have is that Minnesota has a long way to go to improve enough defensively to really make this a contest.
Yeah, and right now, you know, the point spread is floating around 13.5 and 14 points. And I'm going to unpack some of it, and I want you to unpack some of it as well. For me, I think that I think it's a little off, to be honest, because if you look at the defenses from last year, your point, the last point you made was a huge one. Like, Ohio State was still better with a much tougher schedule against much more, infinitely more explosive offenses. I'm willing to give a little bit of a mulligan because it was a COVID year. Because if we take two steps back, that Minnesota 2019 offense was excellent. It really was. And part of me is saying, okay, why is this a 14-point spread on paper and not even more? And maybe it's because Tanner Morgan's coming back and CJ Stroud is in his first start. So quarterback's a huge component in this. But I also think in the back of my mind, this Ohio State defense, for what they lack in raw statistics, towards the back half of that season, they caught fire in terms of explosive defensive line play. And that is a great neutralizer when you have a good quarterback on the other side of the ball. And I think Tanner Morgan's really good. I think that Ohio State, even without some of these guys in the national championship game, bottled up Alabama's run game pretty well, considering the fact that the passing game was putting a lot of stress on that defense. So Ibrahim, who I think is a really, really good running back, and I can't wait to watch in this game, I don't know that he's going to be that effective against this, what I think is really impressive defensive line. So for me, I'm leaning in the camp of this is going to be more than a 14-point win for Ohio State, but I want you to kind of bring me back to the middle and give me some reasons why I should think that maybe not only should it be 14, but maybe even less.
I think the first thing to note is that Minnesota is a very senior-laden team. You got senior quarterbacks, senior running backs, senior receivers, multiple senior offensive linemen, and a ton of seniors on defense. So there's reason to believe that Minnesota and their seniority is going to be a really scrappy team, and that they may benefit from, you know, spring and fall camp to more round into form. The other thing, and I think this may be where the Vegas line is coming from, is that Minnesota has a lot of transfer players that have been injected depth into the defensive side of the ball. For example, Niles Pinckney has been a really productive defensive lineman for Clemson that we've talked about at length on our show, talking about Clemson games for years. And now he's going to be playing for Minnesota. That, given how bad they were defensively in run defense, it's going to be an almost immediate upgrade. I mean, he's a high-level defensive tackle. I don't know that he's, you know, he's not Murphy or Brzee. The problem he had was he's behind two, you know, probably two first-round draft picks at defensive tackle at Clemson, but he's an NFL-caliber defensive lineman. He will be drafted, more than likely. And there are a bunch of guys like that on the defensive unit. And for people like us, it's hard to say what that's going to look like. Even beat writers can talk about guys are playing well. It doesn't mean much in camp, but until we actually see them play a game, we don't know. So I will say Minnesota's defense in particular, probably one of the more uncertain units. And even when we talk about last year's games, right, I felt like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, because their situation was really inconsistent, and they didn't play very many games. The teams they played didn't play many other games, and just getting a grasp of what any of it meant was really hard or worthless. We talked about that a lot with like Oregon and Iowa State. You know, Oregon lost to Iowa State in the bowl game, -4 in the turnover margin, and they played half as many games as Iowa State. What the heck do you do with that? And I think that's a little bit the same thing when you try to compare Minnesota with the few games they played versus Ohio State, that we at least have those playoff data points. But I think that's where it comes from, is those angles, the fact that there's so much seniority. The offensive side of the ball wasn't super productive. They really didn't have consistent receiving play throughout the core, especially when Bateman opted out. But you know, there's a lot of key components there that make you think this could be a salty team, and I think maybe Vegas sees that happening. But I'll go ahead and I guess sort of turn that back around to make my ultimate point. I don't necessarily see that being enough given what Ohio State has to work with in terms of talent, because they do have awesome recruiting classes, especially under Day. And I think they're going to be able to line some guys up and really play football. And Minnesota has a huge hill to climb to keep a two-score game with an Ohio State team that, you know, I mean, you think 13 points sounds like a pretty reasonable spread. It's a large spread, right? How many teams stayed within 14 points of Ohio State last year? I mean, Penn State closed the gap to 13 at the end of the game. Rutgers certainly didn't. Indiana was a seven-point game. Michigan State, they ran out of the stadium. Northwestern, about two touchdowns. Clemson, they beat by more than that. So, I mean, 14 points really isn't a lot when you talk about these top five elite teams. They're more than capable of covering those kinds of spreads and do it really frequently.
Yeah, and just real quick, to put it bluntly, to stay within 14 points of Ohio State right now, you probably need to be a top 10 team, right?
In most cases, yeah. I mean, maybe you backdoor cover it, but to legitimately stay with two touchdowns in a predictable way. Like, it happens. People have down games. But I'm talking about when you bet on a game, you're really betting the average game, which is going to happen like three or four out of five times. The average game for most teams, you probably need to be a top 10 team to be able to stay with within two touchdowns on a reliable basis.
And what I really think is really two things. Like you said, Vegas is kind of banking on probably some first game ugliness from both of these teams, which introduces randomness, which is hard. Like, the randomness can keep a dominant team really from getting a good foothold and getting in a groove. And the transfer players may be a big thing. Sometimes they don't always pan out. But the other thing they are probably looking at is that it's Stroud's first game. And look, we caught some heat from Ohio State fans in our top 10 ranking. And we did a top 10, kind of a preseason top 10 video out there, and a top 10 coaches video that was actually a really interesting watch. We have Ryan Day really high. Y'all would like it. But I'm kind of standing my ground on this one. Right now, not into the year, not into the playoffs, but first game, for you to not think that you're going to have a little bit of drop-off offensively after you lose a dude at running back. And we saw that drop-off in the Alabama game, right? And then you've got Stroud's first start versus Justin Fields' final season, final start. There's going to be a drop-off offensively. There has to be. I don't care how deep, and it is very deep, your wide receiver room is. So there's some of that at play. But I think the overall just Ohio State-ness, y'all can, you know, kind of quote me on that. That's a new thing that we're going to work out with. Ohio State-ness that they have, just in aggregate, is so much greater than some of individual parts, especially when they can kind of, like we talk about with Alabama and Clemson, sort of boa constrictor you a little bit to making your own mistakes. I see that as a situation where at a sum total, I just don't see this being that close. But I want you to talk a little bit about how much getting Ohio State in week one is a big deal, or is it not a big deal? In your opinion, for Minnesota, is that the opportunity that they have to even maybe win the game or keep it close is because they're getting him in week one and not week seven?
I do think it's a big factor. You know, Ohio State has a lot of turnover. I think turnover is tough at the linebacker position for a team. It's also tough at the quarterback position for a team. It just is in college football. I've heard the statistic. People talk about offensive line reps, and that was from a few years ago. That got really hot, but it's the statistical correlation for offensive line starts and winning really actually isn't that high. The largest correlation, by the way, is actually secondary play. Experienced secondaries are a lot better than novice secondaries, which, if you think back, I think you'll realize that happens quite a bit. But I don't know where Ohio State's going to be early in the season. I mean, when you look at like the running back room, I think Master Teague is a solid back, but I think he's a good number two back. I don't know that he's a top five team lead back. I don't think he's an NFL starter tailback. I think he'll make a roster, but I don't think he's an NFL starter. And Ohio State's used to having guys like J.K. Dobbins. And I think Trayvon Henderson may be a guy like that, legitimately. But in game one, I can't see them putting out Trayvon Henderson, having never seen him, you know, man up and block a guy in a live game and expose a quarterback like that. He's going to almost certainly, in my mind, end up playing a reserve role unless he just absolutely wows them and is all around understanding of the game and the playbook. It's very likely going to be a supplemental role. The end of the year may be a different story. And in the same way you talked about C.J. Stroud, I mean, when I watched the spring game, the thing that jumped out for me with Stroud is, one, his athleticism is really high, but two, he was really comfortable when he could step into the pocket and really drive his throws down to a guy in front of him. He was a lot less comfortable dealing with space in the passing game. And what I mean by that is throwing over second-level defenders. He really struggled in that game. And that's the only pass attempts I really have to go by from him. And that's, I think, maybe a skill that's going to take a little bit of time from him. He was a little danced around in the pocket a little bit. I think that'll come down. I don't know how much my take from one game as a non-quarterback coach really means for anything. But I don't think C.J. Stroud at the beginning of the year is going to be the same guy he is at the end of the year. I think what you're going to see from Ohio State is trying to use Stroud's athleticism a little bit, trying to run the ball a lot with Teague in the stable of running backs, and trying to throw a lot of screens and a lot of passes either behind the line of scrimmage or within 10 yards to the receivers and try to let them make a play and move it downfield. I don't think you're going to see a ton of explosiveness. I don't think you're going to see the explosive freshman running back a ton, or at least not as a lead back early. I don't think you're going to see a ton of deep shots like you'd like to, because Fields was really, really good at those, and they pulled him out a lot, just throwing daggers at teams early in this game. So I do think when you get Ohio State later in the year, I think they're going to be a much tougher out. I think all the talent that they have is going to really start to gel, and I think on the offensive side of the ball, they're going to start to use a little bit of a different tool bag of weapons than they will early in the season. I think this is going to look a lot more like a JT Barrett Ohio State team early, and it's going to look a little bit more like the Justin Fields team quite possibly late. But quite frankly, I don't think we're going to really know what that looks like until later, because none of the Ohio State quarterbacks have ever thrown a pass. So I don't really know what they look like when the bullets are flying.
All right, so I think it's prediction time for me, and people need to understand that preseason predictions are tough. They're tough for us, especially because we are numbers driven, and that's why we don't have a computer model until week four, because we feel responsible to speak to what the numbers say. And so that makes this really hard. And this is, and I'll do a sidebar on this, this is why we're not doing a Wisconsin Penn State preview. It's one of the biggest games of the week. We probably do a lot of views, but we couldn't do that game justice because there's so many question marks about those two teams, and we aren't educated enough on those two teams to speak to them, and we just throw a bunch of generic BS out there, and that's just not what we do. So this is tough for me. I do think that Ohio State is just better. They're just more talented. And I think the JT Barrett versus Justin Fields comparison is a really good one in terms of contextualizing this game. And what we said about JT Barrett in a lot of those Ohio State offenses was they're going to murder everybody until they play a top five team on pure athleticism and talent gap alone. And I think that's where we are with Ohio State. Minnesota's got a lot of talented transfers that haven't really played together yet. So give me Ohio State 37, Minnesota 20, which is a cover, but maybe not as big of a blowout as I thought before we started talking. So give me yours.
I'm going to go Ohio State 42-17, so a bigger one. And that really is based off the fact that I think when Ohio State gets up in this game, the depth differential, I think, is going to cause them to kind of run away with it. And I'll add one note on this. People that have followed us for a long time, and I'm going to make some Minnesota fans, some angry, some less angry, know I was never high on two particular hires. That was Taggart and Fleck when they first got hired. And my big soapbox with those two is neither one had significant P5 coordinator or higher level experience. They had a couple little experiences as an assistant coach, but that was about it. And I don't know how well they're equipped to run a program long term. Fleck has a very particular style, and I think it can work with certain kids in a certain environment, especially when they're being successful. I think it can work very well, but I think what we saw last year is it can also struggle a little bit if they're not being successful. And I think we're going to know really early this year what kind of Minnesota team we're going to get. And I think this game, you know, more than just how, like, telling how good Minnesota is or isn't, is going to be a really big deal for Minnesota, because if they get blown out and then they have a couple other rough games, I think things could spiral a little bit, frankly, for Minnesota. And I think the most important thing for Minnesota, it'd be great if you could beat Ohio State, but Minnesota needs to come out and look like they belong on the field, and they need to fight for four quarters and stay in this game. And even if they're losing by 25 points, you know, a backdoor cover where they score a couple late touchdowns and stay in it, I think is really important for the culture that they're trying to build right now. Because I just call it my, like, weird gut. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I feel like where they were at last year, and it's probably the same way this year, is right on the precipice of flex, high energy style, like holding on to the team that really wants to fight with him, or having a team that's struggling badly enough that they just say, like, all right, whatever, man, like, we're not going to win, you know, it's fine. Like, that high energy guys like that need a certain level of success to get buy-in. Because when you don't get it, it's hard for kids to be excited about being on a team where they're losing by 30 points.
Yeah, and I think what you said, even a backdoor cover, just competitive in this game, would speak to, one, a renewed and improved ability as a team versus what they showed last year, and two, it would help with buy-in there. So, all right, let us know in the comments what you think about this game and how it's going to shape up. And don't forget, live show, 10 p.m. Eastern, September 4th. We will see all y'all there. And if we're right or wrong, especially if we're wrong, you can get in there and let us know about it. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week, and God bless.